Well, down a run to Christmas, 11th of December. Hope you're all flat out busy. Hey, just as we kick off, just let me know if you can hear me. If you could just type that into the chat box, it'd be cool. And if you can see my screen as well. So if you could just let us know. It's pretty funny. The other day I did a just an introduction webinar, and I said, "Hey, can you see me? Can you guys see me?" And everyone was saying, "No, I can't see you." They thought they'd be able to see me as a real person. I was meaning, can you see my screen? I thought our system was broken. So, getting used to the technology sometimes is a takes a bit of getting used to. So, yeah, if you could just let me know there, it'd be awesome. Cool. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Justin. Thanks, James. Thanks, Jeremy and Michael. A few others there. Cool. So, we haven't got a few guys, a few no-shows today. Must be that time of year, but that's cool. We're obviously recording everything, so we can go back to it later, and really suggest you do go back to it later as well, because it's a lot we're going to cover off today. Just a couple of things before we do jump in. We just wait for some other guys to join us. Is make sure you've got a pen and paper today and a calculator, because we're going to use the calculator a few times as we go through a few calculations. Just so make sure you've got that handy. And the other thing I thought, as we're sort of sliding into Christmas, or most of us are actually charging into Christmas full steam ahead, is have a think about what you're doing for for your good clients. what are you doing for them in terms of Christmas gift, something thoughtful? I think it's a great idea to do that. I call it critical non-essentials, which is a bit of a fancy name for stuff that's really important, but it's not key to getting things done day to day. And thoughtful Christmas gifts are certainly up there on the agenda. So those good clients you do a lot of work for, you make sure you give them something nice and a thoughtful gift. Doesn't always have to be a box of beers, although that can work quite well, obviously, for a lot of builders. Sometimes we probably think they're inebriated half the time anyway, but let's not go there. But yeah, it might be a gift basket or something they can share with their family or their wife as well, or partner, whatever. You've got to be careful these days. So, but we won't get into that as well. All right. So we'll just wait for one more minute and let the other couple of guys that are joining us jump on. Yeah, it's just about 1:30, so we'll just wait till then, and we'll get underway. I'll just grab a drink before we get started. Hope all the Christmas shopping's done. Is it all done? Not many hands going up there. Okay, let's jump in, guys. So welcome to today's webinar. And today's webinar is called Profitable Jobs Version 2.0, which is I'll explain a little bit about what it's about in a minute. But before we jump into that, I think it's just good, as we always do, just to reflect on where we've been over the last couple of months, what we've been focusing on, and the journey so far. So what we've covered, a quick recap. A couple of months ago, we talked about profitable jobs, which is really the forerunner to today's webinar. And that's all about making sure you're pricing your jobs properly, understanding what your margins are, pricing for a margin, and not just using markup to put your prices together. And doing profit and loss statement and getting the things categorized in the right place, so you understand what your gross profit is, what your net profit is. And then the key thing to take from it is to back cost your jobs. So you've got to go back, see how profitable they were, because that's the juice right there. That'll tell you whether you're making good money out of the jobs or not, which ones are good jobs, which ones are not good jobs, which clients are good, which ones are rubbish and actually costing you money. So if you haven't been, I know a lot of you have been back costing, but if you haven't, you need to get into that. That's a key to success right there. If you have any difficulties or challenges with that, flick us an email, give us a call. Love to help, because that there is A1 priority. Get done. Get that back costing underway. Now, last month we were talking about productivity, so getting more done in less time. So that's really about how effective you are. Time management, if you like. Although I don't really like the term time management, because you can't manage time. You can only manage what you're doing yourself. So that's about understanding your hourly rate and working on the stuff that's most important in your business. Having a good default diary put together, measuring what you've spent your time on, and getting rid of the stuff that's clogging you up, and focusing on those high value tasks. So default diary is really, really key there. So today, what we're going to cover is it's really about going deeper into your financial numbers. I've called it, as I said, version 2.0. And it builds on what we've talked about a couple of months ago when we looked at profitable jobs and the margins and the pricing and the profitability. This is really level two in a way. So if you haven't been through profitable jobs from a couple of months ago, you really need to go back and have a look at that as well, because there's a lot of kind of, I guess, foundation stuff in there, which will be helpful for what we do today. So what we're going to cover is we're going to work out what your break-even point is. So break-even is, you know, that point at which you're covering your costs. So your sales are going to cover your costs, so you're at a zero profit point. And it's really, really helpful calculation because it tells us, we can use it for other things as well, working out, you know, what it's going to cost or how much we need to turn over when we hire new staff or when we buy assets, et cetera, in our business. So that'll be really helpful. Next thing is we're going to talk about sales budget, so, and show you how to put that together. And that's really what you want from your business, so putting a target together. And the sales budget is that target and for what you want to achieve with your business. So good to think about that as we jump into the new year. And then we're going to, the main sort of focus today, once we've got that forecasting area sorted, is to look at your cash flow. So great time of year to do this, because typically over the Christmas break, you know, you've got January, you've got a lot of tax commitments in January, people are away, sometimes, you know, your builders or your other commercial guys are a bit slow at paying, and you've got holiday pay, and it can be a bit tricky. So good time to really focus on your cash flow right now and how to improve it. And we're going to look at what does cash flow actually mean, what is working capital, what drives your cash flow, how to improve it, putting together a cash flow forecast, which is an absolutely critical must-have, you know, tool in your business, and what to do when you're under the pump. So when you're under the conch and, you know, you're really stretched out on your cash flow, how to get that back on track. Because obviously cash is king. Cash is like, well, you know, you need oxygen to live as a person. You're not going to last long without that, a couple of minutes. Your business is a bit like that. The cash is the oxygen that keeps it rolling. So you can be really profitable, but if you haven't got cash, well, you know, it's a pretty tough road. So just in terms of the model, guys, so those steps, setting your financial targets and managing the cash flow is really crucial for moving up the stages of the Million Dollar Plumber model. So we don't want you to be doing $2, $3, $4 million but not have any cash. And we've had, you know, many people come to us, plumbers come on board who are at that level, but they have real cash flow problems. And that's because they haven't sorted out, you know, how to plan their cash flow, how to set targets and forecast for their business. So it's absolutely critical in terms of making those steps. And budgeting and forecasting are all about your financials. So that's the area of the six ways that we're really focusing on today is financials. So guys, just as we kick off, just to hear from you guys, so it's not all about me. What's your biggest money challenge right now? If you just want to flick that into the chat box there, that would be cool, and we can share that with the rest of the team. So what's your biggest money challenge right now? Cool, yeah. Hi Tony, I made it. Well done, Justin. Good to see you, mate. Okay, so Justin says planning for holiday pays. Yeah, that's a huge one, no doubt. Michael's got making sure people pay us over Christmas. So you've obviously had some challenge with that in the past, mate. Yep. getting good margins. Okay, so Rob, yeah, getting good margins. Okay, cool. What else, guys? Scott. Making sure we've got your money to pay people. I presume you mean after the Christmas rush. Yep, okay, cool. And Tina is just organizing stuff for Christmas. Okay, cool. So there's a bit of a theme there. So thanks for that, guys. That's awesome. So let's jump in and talk a little bit about the challenge or the problem that plumbers often face in terms of the cash flow and the forecasting. So a lot of people get really frustrated, like they work really hard, not making the money they should be, and sort of saying, hey, what am I doing wrong? I don't have the cash that I want from my business to keep it running, so I need some more cash. And the problem really there looks a bit like this. You know, have you not got the money you want? You've got poor cash flow. Perhaps your overdraft is, you know, stretched out to the max, and you're bumping up against the limit of the overdraft, you know, consistently. Or perhaps are you finding that you've got, you know, got a bunch of money in your account, and then 2 days later there's no money, and you're like, hey, what the heck happened there? Where did it go? I thought I was looking sweet, but in actual fact, you know, now I'm struggling to actually, you know, make the payments that I need to my merchant or to IRD or whoever the creditor is. Perhaps you're finding that suppliers are demanding payments. So you get to the 20th, you're having to rob Peter to pay Paul. So you're even having to, you know, play suppliers off against each other. Perhaps you're maxed out with one and you've got to go to the other, and perhaps their rate's not as good for you because they're not your main supplier, whatever it is. So are you finding that, you know, suppliers are getting a bit grumpy and basically getting that baseball bat out? Or have you actually been put on stop credit or cash only? So obviously that's really tricky because it's, you know, you need the materials to keep the thing moving forward to actually pay those guys back. Or perhaps things are okay. So you've got some cash and you're kind of happy, but you're not sure whether you're on track. And you're wondering, hey, could I manage my cash better? Could I get more out of this? And how do I actually go about doing that? And if you don't get on top of it, what can happen is, you know, you can run out of cash. You can get to a point where it's really, really difficult to actually move forward at all because you've got no working capital, you're jammed up, you can't get materials, people wanting payment, and the cash is not there. So you can run out of cash. I mean, some people, obviously, their business has to be wound up. But perhaps even more importantly than that is the stress that comes from it. So that's, hey, I'm really stressed out. I'm sick of being, you know, under the pump and back against the wall, and something has to give. And perhaps, you know, you have a chat with your wife or partner or family and friends, and you sort of make the decision, hey, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm actually going to, you know, close this thing down. And obviously that happens to some guys because they just can't get on top of it, and the stress gets too much. So they have to shut up shop. Hopefully not on the street like our friend here. Although you do see a lot more of that around Hamilton these days where we are, which is kind of strange. But anyway, so the opportunity, though, if you get this stuff right, which is the exciting thing, which what today's all about, well, firstly, I think you can be really confident about the business, and it gives you peace of mind. Why does it do that? Well, once you forecast well and you've got a good plan for how things are going to look in terms of your cash and what sort of profits you're making, you can be confident that you're going to have things covered. And that takes away a tremendous amount of stress and anxiety, because not knowing is just a terrible thing, really. And that causes, you know, it's the what ifs, the maybes. But if you're really clear about how things look and you've planned them out, then obviously you can be confident, you can have some peace of mind and make early decisions. And that's the key to success, being, you know, forewarned is being forearmed. Pay your creditors and your wages on time, so you're not scratching around to actually get the payments made. And obviously that reduces the stress and anxiety as well. Now, the other key thing is, you know, once you've got the cash under control and you're building more cash in the business, then you're in a position to actually build some infrastructure. Now, I read something funny a couple of years ago now. I think it was a guy called Jim Rohn. He's a management writer. And he said, money's not everything, but it's right up there with air on the got-to-have scale. And yeah, I agree with that. It's incredibly important to have money because of what you can do with it. And in our business, what we can do once we've built, you know, the cash reserves up is actually build the infrastructure of the business, which is putting the right staff in place, putting the right systems in place. It's about hiring the right, buying the right equipment, getting the right systems, the right staff, and that allows us to buy our time back. And that's how we move up the levels in the million-dollar plumber, is we buy our time back and spend it on things that are more valuable and consistently keep doing that. And the cash helps us do that, helps us have the resources to build the infrastructure. So then we can actually, you know, have some free time as well. So tremendously important. And right at the end of it, I guess, is once you've got the cash flowing in, then you're in a position to actually build wealth. And wealth, and we're talking about, you know, building assets, most probably outside of your business. So it might be looking to do some spec builds, might be building your rental portfolio or shares or commercial property, whatever it is. But you can take the cash, the excess cash, put it into assets, and that builds your wealth. At the end of the day, wealth is what gives you freedom. So net worth gives you freedom. So that's the opportunity, and that's what's exciting about today. So as we jump in, guys, if you just want to pop in the chat box there, why do you want to master your financial numbers? Why is this important to you now, particularly as we head into Christmas? So if you could just pop that in the question box there, that'd be awesome, and we can share that with the team. I'll just grab a drink. Had a tickly throat for a few weeks. All right, so if you pop those in the chat box there, guys, that'd be awesome. Thank you. So Jeremy's put there, so I can get my bills paid on time. Awesome. Scott says, I'll make sure my profit margins are good, mate. Awesome, and make sure you've gone back over that previous webinar, Scott. I know you had a few things you're working on there. Cool. Tina, less stress, so get the stress under control. Awesome. Okay. Michael's put, know if we're on track. Yeah, because I guess that's all about peace of mind too. Okay, cool. Awesome, guys. I appreciate that. Justin says to make a profit, and then there is about 25 exclamation marks. Nice, mate. Get the message. Okay, brilliant. Thanks, guys. Appreciate that. So let's jump in. So there's five key principles here to getting this stuff right that I want to cover off before we get into the nuts and bolts of what we actually need to do. And now some of these principles we've been through before. That's fine. Now, repetition is the mother of learning. And it's really important to get the principles in your head. And you know, it can take a few times because some of these principles and approaches are new to some of you. So that's fine. If you've got them locked and loaded already, that's great. But for those of you who haven't, then listen up because we'll dig down into them again. First one is numbers are the language of business. So I look at it this way: if you go to a foreign country, then you have to speak the language to make sure that you can understand and that people understand you. Now, unfortunately, my experience is that I would say somewhere between 70% and 80% of plumbers are visiting the country of business, if you like, and they really don't understand the language. They don't understand the language, and congratulations for you guys for being, you know, obviously getting on a program like this, because this is one of the things you're obviously looking to get your head around. But if you don't understand the language, then it's very hard to make good decisions and figure out where you need to go. And for me, and I think it's a real tragedy, and one of the reasons I'm so passionate about what we do here at Plumbers Coach is to educate people about what the language of their business is and understand their numbers, because we can raise the bar across the whole industry. And that's going to be good for everyone if people understand how to price properly, understand how to manage their cash flow. So really passionate about this. Business is the language of numbers is the language of business. If you don't understand it, obviously you're going to cost yourself a lot of money. And there's a couple of I guess points to this. One is that numbers are a reflection of the decisions we've made. So you know, the numbers in your business really are your performance appraisal. And one of the things I love about being in business is that you can't hide. You know, it's a totally transparent performance appraisal. If you don't have good profit, if you don't have cash, well, that's, you know, the feedback that you need to change things. So it shows you the quality of your decisions, how well you're performing. You can't argue with it. You know, there's no BSing yourself, I guess. And the other side of that coin is numbers influence your future decisions. So if you're struggling to decide about, you know, a course of action you need to take or a decision, whether it may be hiring another plumber or another tradesman or gas fitter, whatever, or perhaps it's buying some equipment, maybe you want another digger or another piece of equipment or changing premises, the numbers can give you the answer if you understand them. You can figure out what you need to do to break even on those decisions. But if you don't understand your numbers, what I find is most guys will procrastinate on big decisions because they don't have any information to help them make that decision. So critical to get that information, then you can make good decisions. Excuse me. So point number two is budgeting and reporting. So this is a really, really simple process, and it applies to all sorts of things. I mean, I like to run. You set targets for the times you like to run, and you measure yourself, and then you train harder to improve them. Same process: set a target, report against it, and make changes. So budgeting, reporting. This is where back costing comes in as well. So you've got to test the jobs and see whether they came up to your targets. And it's a pretty simple process in the sense that it's test, measure, tweak. Test, measure, tweak. And it's a continual process. Set a target, measure it, and then make changes. And what gets measured improves. So this is really critical. If you measure something, it can't help but improve. If you measure it and you report it, it improves even more. So what I mean by reporting is, hey, you've got to be accountable to someone. Tell someone. You have to show someone the results. And that in itself will motivate you to do a better job with it. And it sort of applies to something we've talked about previously, which is your reticular activating system. So that's kind of the compass for your brain. And it works like this. Hey, if you buy a new, say you buy a new white Amarok, you drive it off the lot, all of a sudden you're driving down the road and all you can see is these bloody white Amarok Utes everywhere. So the brain is actually noticing that thing which it's programmed to notice. Same with your numbers. Once you actually start measuring them, you'll start looking for ways to improve them. It's kind of magical. It amazes me even still how it works, but it works. So if you measure, test, report, budget, then the things will start to improve. So point three, third principle, is the four money hats. So there's not just one thing we need to measure. There's a bunch of them. Now, what I find is most plumbers, they judge performance based on money in the bank. And yeah, that's absolutely critical, and it's one of the main things we're going to focus on today. So have I got money in the bank? Can I pay the bills? But there are successful plumbers wear four hats. Now, we have been through this before, but I'll go through it quickly. Sales is the first one, so that's revenue, money for doing the job. The next one is profit, so that's money left after expenses. And that simply is, the difference between the invoices out and the invoices in. And it tells you how well you're pricing and how productive your team are, pretty much, and have you got your fixed costs under control. So that's your profit. Next is your cash flow. So that's all about your bank account. Have I got money in the bank? How does money flow through the business from people paying us to us paying our suppliers and our creditors? And lastly is equity. So that's how much my business is worth. Now, would someone actually pay me for this thing, for my plumbing business? Is it saleable? Is it an asset? And if you think back to the million-dollar plumber model, those guys are at the sort of the scale, success, entrepreneurship sort of levels. They have a business that has equity value that they could sell. They're not right at the center of it. Someone else could come in and run it. So those are the four hats. Now, let's just talk about the point. Principle four is profit versus cash flow. Again, we've touched on this, but we need to be really clear on how this works because it'll help us with the how, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. There's a tricky area to get our heads around, though, and it probably is one of the most challenging areas to understand the difference between my profit and my cash. And there's a quick accounting lesson, only accounting lesson I ever want to give because it's not that exciting, but it's just understanding the difference between accrual-based and cash-based accounting. And it's really simple. Cash-based accounting, your income and expenses are entered at the time when you receive them or you pay them. So that's all about when they hit your bank account. Now, accrual basis is all about invoicing. So your income and expenses are entered at the time when they're incurred, i.e. when the invoice is generated. So I've got a quick example here we can go through. We'll just make this really clear. Now, I think we covered this in the last Profitable Jobs webinar as well, but that's cool. So we'll just jump through here. So we've got a job up in the top right-hand corner there, and it's worth 20K. Wages are 5K, materials are 7.5. So cost of goods are 12.5, and our gross profit is 7,500 bucks. Incidentally, guys, just so I know you've got your head around this, what would be the gross margin on that job? If you just want to type that into the chat box, what would be the gross margin on that particular job there? You put that in the chat box now, and we can see if you've all got that sorted. Remember, it's gross profit divided by sales. Okay. Okay, I've got three or four guys put it in here. I'll give it just a nice, yep. Okay, so most of you got it there. It's 37, 37.5%. Brilliant. Okay, so we've got that sorted. Probably the most important calculation you can make in your business. So let's see how this works. We've got a timeline, which is a month effectively. So we've got the 1st to the 31st, and then the 20th of the following month. Let's put the numbers down and see how this plays out. So we signed the contract on the 6th. I mean, this is just a made-up job. You could put other figures in here. We start the job on the 14th. We order materials, so that's an invoice that we're going to get on that date. And remember that invoices in your profit and loss statement don't include GST. That's taken out. On the 21st, we pay wages. Wages are a cash expense. They're going to come straight out of the bank account. So there's the expense in the profit statement and on the cash side of it, which is at the bottom. On the 31st, we send the invoice out. We've sent the job, so we've got sales of 20,000. And on the 20th of the following month, client pays us and we pay the merchant. And you'll notice there that those figures include GST. So the cash side of it includes GST, the profit side does not. So at the top left there, our profit for the month is 20,000 less 5,000 less 7,500. Actually, those numbers aren't quite right. oh, no, they're fine. So 7,500 there is our profit. And if we were doing, a profit and loss based on the cash for that month, the 1st to the 31st, it would be negative 5,000 bucks, which is obviously quite different to the profit and loss statement. So that shows you the difference in terms of how you account for your profit and your cash. So why does profit not equal cash? Well, there's several reasons. We've touched on one right there. Your receivables and your payables, and that's images, the comings and goings, if you like, of your business. And it's because your invoice dates are not the same as when the cash comes in or out. In fact, you could have an invoice generated and a sale generated for 20,000 bucks. You might never collect it. The person might go bust or might not pay you. So you'd have that in your profit and loss statement, but it's not going to be in your bank account. Stock. So stock is an issue that can really affect your cash flow. So you might, you've got to buy it with cash, pay for it. It can sit in your workshop or in your vans or in the warehouse if that's how you run your business. Now, when you do your profit and loss statement, you will do an adjustment for stock, but you haven't got any cash from it. So your profit might look all right, but your cash will look, pretty ropey if you've got a lot of stock. And there, a lot of plumbers have massive amounts of stocks. They might have two, three, four, $100,000 worth of stock sitting around, particularly bigger guys. Certain area you can free up some cash. Tax. So tax payments. So think about January. You've got GST, PAYE, prov tax all need to be paid. They're not part of your profit and loss statement, but they're really going to affect your cash flow. Loans, drawings, and buying assets. So if you've got loans in your business, when you repay principal, that affects your cash flow but doesn't come out of, it's not an expense, the profit and loss statement. Or if you take a loan, it's not income, but it is obviously going to give you more cash in your business. Perhaps you need some extra money to finish the beach house. Nice looking beach house. You might need a bit of extra money to finish that one. If you take a lot of drawings out of the business, it's not an expense, but it does affect your cash flow. And some plumbers perhaps aren't as disciplined with, or business owners disciplined with their personal spending, so they take a little bit much money out of the business, and obviously impacts the cash in the business. Or buying assets. So if you buy assets, that's going to use up cash, but doesn't necessarily affect your profit. Or you could sell assets. Again, it's not an income, but it is cash coming into the business. Right, so. Now you've probably heard of the term working capital, so I just wanted to touch on that briefly. Now working capital is used in, it's the capital you need to run your business day to day. So it's what you use to fund your purchases, your wages, pay the power, that sort of stuff, shout beers for the lads on Friday night, all that kind of thing. And the way it works is obviously you have some cash to start with. You need to buy stock, make purchases, pay wages, etc. Turn those into receivables, through, once you make a sale, they become your, you know, your receivables, and then as quickly as possible, get that money back into your business as cash. So our aim with our plumbing business is to actually make that cycle work really quickly as possible. Because if it doesn't work quickly, then we're going to need other funds. Maybe it's a large overdraft or putting money in from outside the business or loans, etc., to actually fund the day-to-day operations, which is obviously has a cost to it. You know, this interest cost, stuffing around cost, stress cost. So we want to make that working capital cycle spin really, really quickly. And we're going to talk about how to make that happen in a few minutes. And in a sense, the working capital, that's like the oil in your car. So it's what lubricates the business and keeps it, you know, flowing. If you run out of working capital, obviously in the poo, because you can't buy materials or pay wages. You can't do the work, can't get the cash in. So one of the reasons that plumbers don't have enough money or working capital is because they're struggling to manage what we call the cash gap. So I just want to explain how this cash gap works, and that will, you know, make you aware of, geez, why I probably don't have as much money at times as you know, as I'd like to, and as perhaps I think I should. So if we have a look, this is just a timeline. So you've got along the bottom there, you've got 0, 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, 120 plus, and they're days. So it's days along the bottom. And this is just an example, guys. It's not a perfect example. You could use your own examples in here. You know, that would be fine. But it'll give you the idea of what we're driving at. So let's say on day zero, we purchase some materials and we start paying wages to do a job. Now we've got, you know, for your merchant account, you've got anywhere from sort of 30 to 50 days, depending on where you buy in the month, to pay those bills. So you don't need to actually start paying cash till, well, at least 30 days. So you've got some grace there. Obviously, your wages payments come out in between there, but we're just keeping this pretty simple. So you perform the services, do the job, and some jobs are done really quickly, obviously those smaller jobs, but some jobs can take a period of time. They might take 20, 40 days. Job's finished, and you send the invoice. So say at day 60. Again, you know, this is just an example. Now, excuse me, you've got to actually collect the money then. So that can take 30 days. Obviously, some of our scallywag builders might take 60 days to pay us, which, you know, does happen. So you receive the cash maybe at day 120 after you've actually started paying for stuff on this job. Or it could be later if your retentions, which, you know, I know some of you guys have retentions with your work. And if, you know, you take 10% off the top, most of you are, you know, at 10%. Some are doing slightly bigger jobs with lower retentions. But if you take 10% off the top, you might be waiting even longer than 120 days, so this cash gap gets bigger. So what happens is there's this gap, if you like, between when you're paying and when you're receiving, which could be up to 90 days. It could be shorter. As I said, it's just an example here, but it gives you the picture that some stage you're likely to face what we call the cash gap, where you've shelled out money for the job but you haven't got it in yet, and you're actually having to fund that job out of your working capital, which obviously puts pressure on other projects and your ability to keep moving forward. So that's the cash gap. So just lock that away. That'll help you understand why at times you're short of funds. So the fifth principle is perhaps the most important today, and it's toughen up. Now, that's a picture of Rocky. I think it's climbing up the Washington Monument, Sly Stone and Rocky, which is a good movie if you haven't seen it. It's an oldie, but a goodie. And, like, I guess a quick show of hands, guys. Who here doesn't like actually asking people for money? Put your hand up if you don't like actually following people up and, you know, kind of creeps you out a bit. Okay, so pretty much everyone's put their hand up. And there's a couple of people who are basically liars, because let's face it, no one really likes having to chase people for money. Okay, you can put your hands down again, guys. Thank you. So managing cash flow is so much about what goes on between your ears, or so much about the top 2 inches. And it's all about power, really. So he who has the power keeps the money. He who has the power keeps the money. So there's a whole sort of psychology of debt collection, and there's three key parts to it that that I want to just go through and share with you today. And I've got a really good little article called The Psychology of Debt Collection, which I'll make sure you get after the webinar. Basically goes along the lines is that you know, some debtors or you know, clients are absolute grandmasters at not paying. So they really are quite immune to most forms of pressure and torture, but they, you know, they really need someone to be quite determined to get the money out of them. So three key things that we can do. One is repetition. So for all problem and new clients, keep on them. So always ring them before the payment's due. Always follow them up if they're not on time. Always follow them up if they don't keep their commitments. So stay on them. Be repetitive. It's a bit like Chinese water torture. And that will, you know, unsettle them. Even if they don't get your call, they know that, it's come. They know that it's coming. So you're top of mind. Next thing is embarrassment. So I think this is a really powerful tool. And, you know, people hate being embarrassed. They'll try and avoid that at all costs. So one thing here is never get angry. You know, make sure that you're firm and fair, because if you do get angry with people, then they can basically, you know, say the, oh, I'm outraged and how dare you treat me like that kind of carry on, which doesn't help. And the second thing is, have you actually visited them, like the personal site visit, turn up, because people will do anything to get you out of there. So, you know, that embarrassment side of it can work. Well, thirdly is credibility. So that's absolutely critical. None of those other two will work if you're not credible. And for those of you who've got kids, if they're young, you'll know exactly what I mean. If they're older, you've probably forgotten. But you'll remember that, you know, if you ask them to do something, but you never have a consequence if they don't do it, then you're going to be picking up crap off the floor forever. So there has to be consequences. If there's no consequences, you know, you're basically screaming into the breeze. And, you know, nothing's going to change. So, and creditors are typically in two camps. You know, there's the enforcers and the non-enforcers, so we need to be an enforcer. It's not easy, but it's absolutely critical. So if we say we're going to do something, we need to do it. We need to be prepared to put people to debt collection, put in place the processes to get the money back. Because these people have paid us. They've, you know, got us to do the work. It's the contract for them to pay us. So that's the psychology of it. Obviously, psychology is critical here. And there's a actually in the Psychology of Debt Collection article, there's a reference to something called the hoverfly. Now, the hoverfly is an insect. It looks like a bee, behaves like a bee, but it has no sting. But it doesn't get any stick from predators because they think it's a bee. So we need to be a little bit like the hoverfly and make people think we're really going to, you know, sting them. And then we mean business. Okay. So, that's the five principles. Before we jump into the logistics of what we need to do to put this in practice, just really keen to hear from you guys. What have you learned so far? What have you found helpful? What, if any, insights have you got out of those principles? If you can just chuck that in the chat box, guys, that'd be awesome. And I'll just grab a drink while you do that. Okay, so Blair's put there, I get psyched out when asking for money. Well, it's easy to get psyched out, yeah, for sure, it is, it's not easy. And I think, you know, people can sometimes play on that. So it's the old squeaky wheel gets the oil type trick. Rob's put there, it is a head game, I've never thought of that. Scott's put, yep, need to toughen up. Okay. Awesome. Yeah, Michael says, wow, the cash gap. I never thought of that. Yep. It's important to understand that. Obviously, the key is understand and then do stuff to make it, you know, make it better. Cool, Justin, we've made good progress with this. Cool, mate. Awesome. Okay. Thanks, guys. That's cool. There's a few other things that we'll crack on. So let's look at then what I need to do now. So the nuts and bolts of what I actually need to do now. Well, first thing is, let's calculate your break-even point. So break-even is simply that level of sales that you need to turn over to actually keep the wolf from the door, or the zero profit. It means you've got your fixed costs covered, everything's paid for, but there's not actually profit as such. So this is really simple to figure out. And I've put the formula here. Formula is, what are your fixed costs, and divide that by your gross profit margin. So remember, your fixed costs we talked about a couple of times ago is those costs that don't change, things like rates, rent, insurance, ACC, staff, admin wages, all that kind of stuff. So you get that from your profit and loss statement. So what are my fixed costs? And then you divide that by your gross profit margin. So here's an example. Example, let's say your fixed costs are 420K. So that's everything added in, 420K. And your gross profit margin is 40%. Means you need to turn over. So all you do is you divide 420,000 by 0.4, 40%, and your break even is 1,050,000. And then you can break that down to monthly, weekly, and daily if you want to. So it's that simple. That's all you need to do to figure out your break-even point. Now, I've got a calculator to help you with it, which I'll make sure is in the resources following the webinar. And it looks like this. And you can see on the right-hand side there, you put in your fixed costs. This one's 475 at a 40% margin. And it'll calculate for you the monthly, weekly, and daily break-even figure and sales that that you need to do. So that's really simple. Now, it's a great calculation, though, because it's got so many uses. It's a bit like the Swiss Army knife of financials. And what are some of the uses? Well, you know, you can, as I said earlier, you can calculate the payback on decisions you make. So, for instance, if you're thinking of hiring another plumber, or perhaps a drain layer, a gas fitter, or even an office person, figure out how much it's going to cost to employ them for the year. Divided by the gross margin, that'll tell you the extra sales that you need to generate to make this thing fly. And then you can break that down into monthly and weekly figures to see if you're on track. Same thing as if you're looking to hire to get some more equipment, maybe a digger or some other equipment. Do a break-even calculation, figure out what you need to turn over to get it back. So really helpful for that. And what it does do is, and we'll do a quick example actually, guys. Actually, we should do that now. Let's say, grab your pen and paper and your calculator. And this will help you understand the importance of margin as well, actually. Let's say you're going to hire a new team member, and it's going to cost you 80K, so it'd be 60K for the person and 20K for the van, you buy a second-hand van. And your margin's 40%. So what would you need to turn over to make this person break even? So if you want to just put that in the chat box, that would be cool. So you've got $80,000, that's the cost, the margin's 40%, and remember the formula, I'll just click back there for you guys. The formula is fixed cost divided by gross profit margin. So in this case, it would be $80,000 divided by your 40%. So what would we need to turn over to break even on that guy? Just pop that in the question box there. Okay, so a couple of you got it. I'll just wait for the rest of you to pop it in there before I spill the beans. Got a bit of dead air there. It's not good for radio. Okay, so most of you got it in there. It's a couple of other guys. So it's 80,000 divided by 40%. What does that give us? So we keep losing your voice. Sorry, missing a few of the questions. Is anyone else not hearing me? $200K. Brilliant. Okay, thanks, James. Is that better, Justin? Can you hear me? think everyone else is okay. So that's exactly right. It's 200K. So most of you got that. So you need to turn over an extra 200K. And then you can break that down to, you know, monthly, which is, what, 16, 17K a month, to see if you're on track, see if he's actually paying for himself. Now, let's say you actually had a margin of 20%. Well, you'd need to turn over double. Yeah, sometimes it is at your end, mate, James, Justin. So if your margin was 20%, you'd obviously need to do double the turnover to make this guy break even. So that's an important point and shows you how important the margin is as well. So break even, you can use it for all sorts of things. All right, so that's the break even. Now let's talk about your sales budget. So this is the next thing is to put a sales budget together. So that's really a prediction of your profit and your loss statement for the future. And what a budget does, look, most people when they talk about budget are thinking, hey, you know, I did XYZ, I did, you know, $2.5 million last year. I'll go for $2.6 million this year and I'll put some costs down and I shouldn't spend any more than that. That's how people think of a budget, kind of in an accounting kind of control costs perspective. I think we need to flip it on its head a bit and think about it as a budget as a target. So it's the target or the goal we have for our business. And as I said, people usually aim for a turnover figure, but they're not really sure why they're doing that or whether that's appropriate or whether that's what they actually need or want from the business. But good budgeting is really about making sure you're making the profit that you need from the business to support the lifestyle that you're looking to achieve. So it always starts with thinking about your goals and your vision. So this is just a page from our vision book or my vision book with my family. We've got three sons, Jack, Alec, and William. William's the little one. And my lovely wife, Bronwyn. I always say it's good to marry above yourself because it's good for the gene pool, so I did well. But yeah, you start with the vision that you have for your life, and then you figure out, hey, what sort of income and profit do I need for my business to achieve that? So what do I need to make to actually achieve this? Let's say, for instance, and we'll use it as an example today, hey, I want to make 300K. 300K would really help set me up, achieve some of my goals. We can do our travel, upgrade our home, get our new car, whatever it is that it's important to you. So the next question is, what level of sales do I need to actually, you know, make that happen? Not what I think I can do, but what do I need? So to work that out, it's just like the break even. Except this time we include what our, you know, profit figure is. So our sales figure really is desired profit plus fixed cost over gross margin. So an example here, fixed costs are still 420, but we want to make 300K now. So it's 300,000 plus 420 over 40%. So now we've got a sales forecast, 1.8 million. That's what we need to do for the year. And it's 150K per month. So that's our monthly sales target. Simple. Excuse me. So the next step is to actually enter that into our sales budget. So there's a lot of different templates that can be used for budgets. And most accounting systems have a budget manager. So Xero has a budget manager or MYOB. You can put your budgets in there, which is great. I've also got a spreadsheet template that I'll make sure you get to do it as well, which I find really helpful. To do the workings, and then you can actually maybe put them into Xero or MYOB or Infusion, whatever you're using. So you just put the budgeted sales in there. So you'll see the area that's circled, $150,000 each month, which adds up the total on the right there, $1.8 million. Now you can and probably should vary those for seasonality. So typically January's going to be a bit light, so you might have a little bit less in January and spread that out over the other months. You don't have to. It's okay to have them level, but you know, to be as accurate as possible, you would feather them out a bit. So that's putting the top line in there, if you like. That's how you figure out what your target sales is. Next step is to estimate your cost of goods. So that's your direct costs, if you remember. Typically, materials, subbies, and wages. You might have some equipment hire as well. Now, this is going to really vary between plumbers based on the type of work you do and the overall margin that you're looking to achieve. But I've got a rule of thumb that I use, which, you know, you're welcome to use. And it goes like this. If your target margin is 40%, and that's a pretty healthy margin, you know, not everyone's going to achieve that, but it's certainly possible and got guys doing that and better. So it's a good, healthy target. If your target margin is 40%, then I work on labor being 22.3% of the sales. So 22.3% of sales will be labor, so that would be 150,000 times 22.3%, which would give you 52,500, which you could see. That's for materials. Sorry, read that wrong. Rewind. Your materials will be 35% of sales. So the materials, 35% of sales, 150,000 times 35%. Your subbies, 2.7%, and your labour, 22.3%. So 150,000 times 22.3 would give you the 33,500. And that'll give you a 40% margin overall. Now, if you're aiming a little bit higher, a little bit lower, that's cool. You just need to adjust those percentages appropriately. It is an estimate. It's not, you know, going to be exact, but that's fine. And as you do more reporting, you'll refine it as it applies to your business. So that's the cost of goods. And you'll see here down the bottom, right-hand side, our gross profit is $720,000 at 40%, which is what we're budgeting. Next step is to estimate your fixed costs, so that's your overheads. Now, process here is pretty simple. Go to zero or MYOB and print off your previous profit and loss, you know, ideally for several months or a year, and just divide it by the number of years in that report, and that will give you a good starting point for what are the actual fixed costs. And they typically are the same each month. They might vary a little bit if you know there's certain expenses that come at certain times of the year, and you could feather that out. So you would make any changes for stuff that's upcoming that you know about. For instance, if you're going to hire, you know, get a new premises in February, and the rent's going to go up by five k a year, you'd put that in obviously because you can plan for that. So that's estimating your fixed costs, and then you'll see right down the bottom on the right hand side where it's circled there, you've got your net profit target of 300k. So we started off trying to make 300K. We've budgeted out to the bottom there, and that's fallen out the bottom. And that's our target for the year, which we can use to see if we're on track to achieve what we want for our life and what we've got in our vision book and in our goals. And the process then is that you take your monthly profit and loss and then compare that to the sales budget. Look at the variance and, you know, identify that and fix any problems as they go along. So that's really the process of budgeting. It's pretty simple. Most people can put a budget together, so half an hour to an hour, have a good crack at it, and then you've got a good template for what you need your sales and your cost structure to look like over the next 12 months, which is really exciting, gives you a target. Okay, so let's take a breath, just grab a drink, and we'll move on to the next topic, which is actually cash flow management, which is obviously critical at this time of year. Okay, so next thing, once we've got our sales budget, is to put a cash flow budget together. So cash flow is quite different to that profit and sales budget. As we said earlier, cash is king, so it's really the oxygen that we need to keep the business alive. Obviously, really important to do it this time of year. So what is the cash flow budget? Well, simply it's a prediction of your bank account. So how does your bank account look over the next period of time? Could be month, year, whatever. And why is it important? Well, it's important for this reason. It allows you to plan and identify when you're going to be short of cash, when you're going to have excess cash, so you can be forewarned and therefore you can be forearmed. Now, it'll also show to you, hey, when are you going to be short of working capital? And you might need to, you know, make some arrangements to get some working capital to get you through, because even if your plumbing business is really profitable, there might be times, depending on projects, where you are going to feel the pinch a little bit, which is okay. That's okay, as long as you're planning for it and you're making changes as you go through and taking action to mitigate those risks. And why is it important to have this forecast? Well, another reason is if you do need to go to the bank to get working capital, they're going to love you if you take a forecast to them for the next 8 to 12 weeks, whatever it is, show them to it. They'll be like, holy heck, here's, you know, the one in 100 probably businesses who come to us with a cash flow forecast. It helps your credibility, makes you be taken seriously, and they're much more likely to see you as a good risk, which is really what it's about at their end. See, cash flow forecasts, you can do it yearly or monthly, weekly, or even daily. Now, for me, I think weekly is the best option. It's going to give you the most value without being, you know, too much hard work. So let's look at how we put it together. And again, there's different tools you can use to create a cash flow forecast. I've got a really simple and elegant spreadsheet you can use to do it, which we'll get through to you. So I suggest you use that for the start, and it's a weekly cash flow forecast. So how do you put it together? Well, first thing is you've got to estimate your incoming cash. So that simply is everything that's coming into your bank account. And I suggest you do this for 8 to 12 weeks. Any longer than that, it's kind of too much guessing. Any shorter, it's not, you know, far enough out to help you plan. So work on an 8 to 10 week rolling cash flow. All we do, if you see on the left-hand side, well, along the top you've got the weeks. Down the left-hand side you've got projects. So we put down the projects we know we're going to get paid from, and we can have another line here which we've called maintenance jobs, and that's obviously estimated. You don't know exactly what it's going to be, but you'll have an idea. And you put down when you expect to get paid and how much you expect to get paid, and include the GST. That's important. So you put the GST in here because that's coming into your bank account. You can use it for a month, 2 months before you actually have to, you know, pay the respect to Uncle Bill at the Beehive. So we've got the greenhouse, red road, pink street, red place, blue road, lilac, and yellow Ave. So they're different projects we work on. They could be anything. Put down the week in which you expect to get paid with the GST amount in it as well. Obviously, the timing's critical here, so it's got to go in the right week because your bank balance is changing week to week. And you'll see along the bottom there the total cash income, so it's telling you the total amount of cash coming into your business that week. The next step is estimate your outgoing cash. So this is all the money that's going out of your bank account. Actually, what you'll notice here too, guys, is I didn't mention this just before, if we go back to the cash in, is around the 20th of the month, that's when most of the activity is going to happen because that's when most people pay you. So you're going to have a lot more cash coming in that week. So that's important, obviously timing, as I said. Estimate your outgoing cash. So again, this includes GST paid. And timing, again, is critical. So you'll notice on the 20th of the month, then you're going to have most of your big bills coming out. But there'll be other stuff that comes out through the month. Wages, some of your APs or your direct debits won't necessarily come out on the 20th. Now, in the outgoing cash, there's some other things we need to think about. We need to think about PAYE, GST payment to IRD, prof tax payments, that kind of stuff. Any extra drawings that you're going to make, if there's any loan repayments that need to go out, they'd come in here. If you're buying any assets with cash, they'd come in here as well. So it's basically a list of everything that's coming out of your bank account over the next 8 to 12 weeks. And to do it, it's always helpful to go back through your last couple of months' bank statements and look at how they look, because that's most of the stuff that'll be coming out. Takes a bit of work to do it the first time. I'm not going to lie to you on that, but once you've got it up and running, you should be able to keep this up to date with probably half an hour a week. Or your office person, more importantly, could do it for you, which is who should be doing it. So next thing is then you preview your predicted cash balance. So what you do is you put in your start bank balance, which is the red circle there, so what your starting bank balance is, and the spreadsheet will calculate the incoming and the outgoing and then give you an ending bank balance for that week. And you can see the prediction for your bank account over that next 8 to 12 weeks. So you'll see on the week of the 19th of the 9th, which is the third column along, you're right, you know, in the negatives, down 42 grand. Okay, that's fine. That's no problem. But it just shows you, hey, if your overdraft is, you know, only 30K, then you're going to be in trouble. You're not going to have to pay your bills. So it helps you plan and identify when you're obviously in surplus or in deficit, and make those decisions about what you need to do to change that. So that's what it is. It's pretty simple. It takes a bit of work to get started, but once you're up and running, it's relatively simple, and it's going to give you tremendous information about how you're looking. You don't have to wing it or carry it around your head anymore. Worry about what's how it looks. You're going to know how it looks, and then you can make the decisions. So the next step, once you've got it set up, is to actually adjust it, your forecast with your actuals. So when things firm up and you know what's actually coming in, you can put it in the forecast. At the end of the month, you can have a look at your payables for the 20th of the following. Put that figure in there, the actual. So it can be pretty accurate. And that's obviously the more accurate, the more helpful it is for yourself. So that's your cash flow forecast. I'll get you all the templates for this, and if you have a crack at it, send it through, and we can have a look at it for you as well. So the next thing, and really the last thing that we want to cover off today, and we're nearly an hour, so we'll crack on, but I think this is important, so we'll get through it. How to close the cash gap and actually improve your cash flow. So how to close the cash gap and improve the cash flow. Well, one of the key things is doing that cash flow forecast right from the get-go. So that's a key first step, so you know how it looks, and then you can see what the size of the challenge is. And once you've got the cash flow done, then the forecast done, then you're in a position to actually put in some of these other strategies to make sure the cash flow position looks strong. The most important thing is, are you profitable? So if you've got cash flow problems, well, cash flow is not a problem. It's a symptom of other things. So the first place you need to look is actually at your margins and your profit. Does your profit and loss look good? Because even though profit and cash are not the same thing, if you've got good profit, that will turn into cash eventually. So go back and look at your margins. If your GP is sort of 25%, even maybe up to 30%, certainly if it's below 25, it's most likely at some stage you're going to have some cash flow pressure because your profit is just not, your margins are just not high enough. So you need to, price for a margin, back cost your jobs, do your profit and loss statement, look at your sales budget, and make adjustments as you go through. So that's the key first step. Am I profitable? Next thing is having a good accounts receivable process. So you might have made the sale, but you actually got to get the money in. So Jess puts the slides together, and she found this one, which I thought was pretty funny. If an invoice is due in 30 days, we pay it in 60 days. If it's due in 60 days, we pay it in 90 days. If it's due in 90 days, then they probably don't need the money at all. So if you're lax and not on the ball with collection, you'll have trouble. Nothing surer. So key thing is here, do you actually have a process? Have you got a step-by-step process for collection, or do you just wing it and make it up as you go along? So how would a process look? Well, it needs some steps. So obviously you've got to get the invoices out, and then some of the steps you might, and I've got a system here, which I'm not going to go through all the steps in it. I'll put it in the reading. But steps would include, for your high value clients and the large invoices, giving them a call the day before the payment's due. That's step one. Making sure there's no problems, they've got the invoice. Step two is calling them if they don't pay when they said they're going to pay. Step three is another call 7 days later to follow up when they agreed to pay next. Then the next step is the first letter you send, and then the next step is the second letter you send, and then the third step is when you send them to collection. So making sure there's a step-by-step process that you follow that can take the emotion out of it. So process, really, really important. And ideally process that you're not running, that one of your team's running, so you're sort of a step out of it. Next thing is, have you got your terms of trade sorted? So you obviously need them, and they need to be signed by your clients and agreed to, and they need to have teeth. And if people don't sign them, then that's a good warning sign. There might be something amiss there. And I guess the key thing about this, I don't want to labour this a lot, and again, I'll put an example of terms of trade in the downloads for you guys, so you can use that. You should get it checked by a lawyer, though. Just that's important because it is a legal document. But if without them, you don't have any comeback. Well, you have limited comeback, so make sure you get your terms of trade sorted. Fast invoicing. So I think this is hugely important. Now, typically what I find, if there's a cash flow collection problem, there's a problem with the speed of invoicing. Typically, people are not doing the invoicing quickly enough. And that could be that they need more administration staff. So have a look at that. Have you got enough staff? Or two, the person who's responsible for it, and sometimes it can be the owner, is not actually spending the time on it. So they are not scheduling it into their default diary because it is an A1 task that's got to be done. No point getting more new clients, doing more new work if you're not collecting the stuff you've already got. So make it a priority. Next one is looking at your payment terms. So that's part of your terms of trade. So can you go to 7 days? Obviously for your commercial clients and builders that typically doesn't work, but for the smaller maintenance emergency jobs, that can really help with the working capital. So if you speed up that cash flow cycle, that working capital cycle, close the cash gap there, it can give you good working capital to pay your wages and keep the thing flowing. Have a think about taking credit card payments. That can certainly help with collection. And it's a good marketing tool as well. And ask them to get the credit card at the time when they make the order as well. So it can just be paid when the job's done. Manage your payables. So that's the people you owe money to. This is really about tracking them well and then communicating well with your creditors, with your merchants particularly. And can you look to negotiate some better terms? Perhaps you've got a longer term to pay. Or maybe look at consignment stock so you're not having to shell out for it before you're actually selling it. This won't apply to everyone, but for some of you guys who you have a shop or are out of town and you need to carry more stock, that can really help free up the cash flow. So have a think about that as well. And lastly, if you are actually in the poo or right under the hammer and cash flow is a major challenge for you right now and you're getting behind, What do you actually need to do to get things back on track? Well, you need to do all the things we've talked about, but you might need to do a little bit extra, and a lot of it is about your credibility. So make sure you're profitable, number one, and figure out what the cause of the cash flow problem is. So what's the cause? Is it profitability? Is it collection? Is it administration? What is it? Fix that up, and then look to negotiate realistic payment terms with the creditors. So that's all about under-promising and over-delivering. Now, what typically happens is you're in a weak position and you're scratching around and you kind of make a promise just to keep the wolf from the door. But often it's a promise you can't keep. That puts you in a difficult position because when you don't keep it, it undermines your credibility, and that's when things really start going south quickly. See, the way I look at it and in our experience working with, I had a number of guys in this situation, and the good thing about plumbing is once you get your margins right, it can be, it's very profitable when your margins are good. And so you can come back relatively quickly and make some great profits and pay people off relatively quickly. But you've got to get, obviously, the numbers right, and you've got to have enough time to do it. So that's where the credibility side of it's important. You don't want people sort of shutting you down. The creditors want you to succeed, basically. They want you to win. And like they say, if you owe the bank $100,000, it's your problem, but if you owe them $1,000,000, it's their problem. So some of that goes on as well. And you are in it together, and they certainly don't want you to go south. So the key is to really put a realistic plan together, and that gives the creditor confidence that you're a good risk. So frequent, honest communication is really important, and always, as I said, under-promise and over-deliver. And don't make this mistake. Don't make payment promises to your creditors based on promises that people have made to pay you. So, for instance, your builder promises to pay you by a certain date, so you promise to pay the merchant. Because if your builder lets you down, then you're stuffed. Work on certainties, not maybes. That's very, very important. Under-promise and over-deliver. And also spread the repayments over as long as possible. So give yourself the best chance of succeeding. Don't say you're going to pay stuff off in 3 months when realistically it's going to take 12 months. So if you go for longer, you can always pay it off quicker. They'll love you. That'll work in your favor. But that is a mental game, and you have to be very strong with that. Okay, and lastly, and this is absolutely critical, marketing is always part of the equation. So marketing gives you power, the ability to get good new clients, means you're less reliant on those low-paying, low profit clients that may be causing you a cash flow problem. So having a strong marketing plan in place, and we're not going to go into that right now, we'll cover this in the New Year's webinars, really hooking into the marketing. Marketing gives you power because you can get clients. And as I said earlier, who has the power has the cash. Who has the power has the cash, and marketing is a key way of getting you more power. Okay, guys, so that's basically most of the content for today. Just to wrap up, what are the next steps? Excuse me. First thing is go away and calculate your break-even point. So figure out what that is for your business. Build your sales budget. So put that sales budget together. Put it up on your wall so you've got a good target for where you need to head. Put together your cash flow forecast. I really suggest you get this done before Christmas because it'll help you over that Christmas break if you haven't done it already. Close the cash gap, so put those strategies in place to help speed up the working capital and close the cash gap. Flick it through to us. So I'd love to have a look at it, and we can give you some feedback and help make sure that it's where it needs to be. So I'm the one in the middle. Rachel's on the right. Some of her kids saw a photo of me the other day and called me Slender Man. So that's Slender Man in the middle. That's my superhero name. And I'm not sure what's wrong with the ladies, but they both don't seem to like the left-hand side of their face to show. I'm not sure what that's about. But anyway, get it through to us, and we'd love to look at it and give you the feedback to make sure it's on track for you guys. In terms of the templates and the downloads, so here's what you'll get after the webinar. We'll put the recording together and get it through to you. And we're really excited because we have just about finished the membership website, revamping all that. It's taken way longer than we hoped, but we're just about there. So look out for that next week. So that'll be really exciting, and all this information will be in there for you. So, guys, any questions before we finish up? What did you learn? Any feedback? What's going to change? Love to hear from you. You want to throw any of those questions in there? If you don't have any questions, that's fine. Okay, so Scott says, hey, looking forward to having a crack at that stuff. Cool. Rob says, looks pretty simple. Yep, it is. There'll be probably a few questions you have as you go through it, but that's why we're here. Just flick it through to us. We'd love to have a look at it and get it right for you guys. Awesome. So not a bunch of questions. Any other questions, guys? Awesome, no questions, Tony. Keen to get more involved with the next steps. Good stuff, Justin. Okay, guys, well, we might finish up there. It's gone a little bit over time today. My apologies there, but obviously some good information in there. I wanted to get that all to you. And let's make the last couple of weeks before Christmas count. We do have a question and answer webinar next week, which will go through some of this the nuts and bolts of this nitty-gritty in terms of putting numbers into there, so that should be helpful as well to get it done for you. But I think I might finish up now, guys, and hope you guys have a great day, and good luck with getting this stuff done. And if you have any questions at all, just flick it through to us. And what we'll do in the new year, next education webinar will be all about planning for growth for 2015. And looking at setting the right goals, getting the right plans in place for making 2015 a great year. So sweet, guys, great to have you on board today, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Choice team, we'll see you later.